Hey everybody, Rob Maurer here, and today we've got quite a bit to go through from over the weekend. We have a new Elon Musk interview from last evening. We also have a new street high price target from Alex Potter over at Piper Sandler, new comments from Ron Barron and Kathy Wood, and a couple other things to go through as well. It was a strong day for Tesla stock today, finishing up 5.8%, shaking off the fall from Friday to close at $839.81. That compared to the NASDAQ, also with a very strong day, up 2.5%. That move today may have benefited from a new street high price target of $1,200 per share from Alex Potter over at Piper Sandler. Previously, their price target was $515, but it's been quite a while since they have updated it. And for good reason, they've been working on a 104-page report, which they are calling the Definitive Guide to Investing in Tesla. Many of you will be familiar with Alex Potter. He's been on the podcast 3 separate times. Likely with this update, we'll have him on again very soon. So I'm not going to go into probably the normal level of detail that I would for a 104-page report. But unsurprisingly, this is probably the most in-depth analyst note that I've seen on Tesla so far. And that's not to say it's going to be anything earth-shattering for those that follow the company extremely closely, but it does a great job of setting the stage for those that are newer to Tesla and need that grounding on why the heck Tesla is so valuable. The report also does a great job of contextualizing the opportunity, so breaking the automotive market down by region and by segment, which does a couple things, both shows Tesla's dominance in the segments they are playing in, and then shows how close they are to really being able to expand their reach and continue growing. Piper sums up the report by saying, quote, 2020 was a breakout year for Tesla, but in our view, the fireworks aren't over. Even after a 10x return over the past 12 months, we don't think investors should be selling the stock. They continue on to say that, quote, the report details the updated assumptions underpinning our 20-year discounted cash flow model, including estimates for vehicle deliveries by model and region. While it is more exhaustive than anything we have published to date, even our expanded model does not capture all potential revenue streams. Indeed, with Tesla's target industry still embracing outdated business models, it may be decades before this company runs out of new opportunities to pursue. End quote. One thing I would just add to that, when there is opportunity, that supports a higher valuation, higher price to sales, higher price to earnings. As far as this note goes, we can already see a stark contrast between Potter's forecast and what bears are forecasting. When we've gone through those lower price targets in the $100 to $300 range, turns out those analysts are almost always forecasting maximum about 2 years out. And here Potter is using a 20-year discounted cash flow, so his forecasts actually go all the way out to 2040. As far as his model is laid out, the 2030 to 2040 years are really determined based on full self-driving, so he doesn't actually have vehicle growth continuing beyond 2030, as Piper Sandler expects the new vehicle market to actually shrink because of the increased utilization due to robo-taxis. So we'll just kind of stick to the first decade there, and obviously the further out you go, the less confidence you can have. But as far as their forecasts go, for 2025, they're forecasting, I believe, a street-high 4.8 million vehicle deliveries. That would actually be pretty in line with what Musk had previously said about achieving more than 4 million in 2025, maybe even slightly aggressive based on that. But since then, we've had Battery Day, and certainly it looks like Tesla has ambitions to grow at beyond that 50% compound annual growth rate over the next few years. And that's actually something we're going to talk about here a little bit later when we get to that Musk interview. So 4.8 million vehicles in 2025, and then for the energy business, he's also forecasting 75 gigawatt hours deployed that year for energy storage and 1.64 gigawatts of solar. In 2020, Tesla did about 3 gigawatt hours of energy storage and about 0.2 gigawatts of solar. So the forecast here would be 25 times growth for energy storage and 8 times growth for solar. Those would, of course, compare to about 9.5 times growth for automotive in this forecast. As for 2030, Potter is forecasting, again, I believe a street high here, 9.3 million vehicle deliveries in 2030. But unlike the 2025 forecast, this one, of course, would fall far short of what Tesla is targeting of about 20 million vehicles per year by that point in time. As for energy, they're forecasting 426 gigawatt hours of energy storage in 2030, so about 5.5 times their 2025 forecast. And then for solar, another 3x there to 5.25 gigawatts. Within solar, Piper Sandler notes that the total addressable market just in the United States alone for the solar roof should be about $165 billion a year, just from the 5 million new homes built each year in the United States, and assuming somewhere around a $30,000 average selling price. The main driver for the valuation, though, is Tesla's full self-driving, so Potter is expecting a mix of lump sum purchases and subscription revenue over time, but for a lump sum, he's projecting that the full self-driving price could eventually rise as high as $39,000. Now, that might sound a little bit crazy at first, but that was effectively what Elon Musk was saying on the Q4 earnings call when he just ran through the simple math of saying that the added utility from an autonomous vehicle should at least double the value of the car. So at any rate, Piper Sandler then assumes an 85% gross margin on that additional revenue. And then because that additional revenue becomes such a significant portion of the overall company's revenue, and because it's happening at an 85% gross margin here in the forecast, they have the total company gross margin expanding beyond 50%. So setting aside the revenue forecast there for a second, kind of the funny thing is you could argue that that 85% gross margin is actually very conservative. If you think about that, on a $39,000 option, an 85% gross margin would be about $33,000 of gross profit, thereby leaving the cost of goods sold for Tesla on the option at $6,000 per car, which I have a hard time seeing, especially considering that the option, even a couple months ago, only cost $8,000 for the consumers to buy, and we already know it's very high margin. Obviously, looking out this far, there's going to be a number of different variables impacting the price target. That would just be one of them, but I do think it's an interesting discussion point. As for other elements of this note, Piper Sandler does mention Tesla insurance, noting it could be a $12 billion per year business line in 2025. But Piper Sandler generally expects Tesla to use that value to lower the total cost of ownership and increase the total addressable market, rather than leveraging it for profit. That happens to be my stance as well. Lastly here, Piper Sandler does note Tesla's impressive leverage on capital expenditures, and they do cite a Tesla Daily video in that section, so that's how you know it's quality research. But in all seriousness, thanks to Alex for including that, and again, hopefully we'll get him back on the podcast here soon to discuss this note in more detail. All right, next up here is Elon Musk's interview on Sunday evening. This took place via the Clubhouse app, which is kind of a beta audio chat room app. The interview was about an hour and a half or so, and a lot of it is stuff that most of us here would have heard by now many times. So we're just going to stick to some of the select details that were a little bit new. The first here, and probably the biggest headline-grabbing news, was that Elon Musk did officially confirm his support for Bitcoin, noting that he was late to the party, but quote, "I do at this point think Bitcoin is a good thing, and I am a supporter of Bitcoin," end quote. So this is a topic we've been talking about for the last couple of weeks. Elon has been joking around about it on Twitter, and of course we talked about on Friday how he updated his Twitter description to read hashtag Bitcoin. He also added last night that he thinks Bitcoin is, quote, "really on the verge of getting broad acceptance by conventional finance people," end quote. So, like it or not, Tesla and Bitcoin speculation will now be inextricably linked, especially as some other companies move to include Bitcoin on their balance sheet. So we're going to have to continue to talk about it. It's probably something that's going to come up on one of the earnings calls, if not many of them, and I wouldn't be surprised to see Tesla add Bitcoin to their balance sheet sometime in the next year. As far as Tesla specifically in this interview, not too much discussion around it. They talked a little bit about autonomous driving. Of course, LiDAR came up, as it always tends to do. I think maybe the only nugget here worth reporting on is Elon did say that, quote, "So I think we expect possibly an acceleration of compound annual growth. Well, at least aspirationally, that's our goal," end quote. This came after Musk was talking about their internal battery cell production, implying that as the enabler for faster growth. For context, Tesla's compound annual growth rate on deliveries over the last 5 years has been 58%. So we know they've guided to above 50%, and they've talked a lot about that. That gets you to 4 million in 2025, 20 million sometime around 2030. And Elon here is saying that aspirationally, they hope to grow faster than that. That doesn't necessarily change that 20 million longer term target, but at least for the next few years, Tesla's certainly trying to be ahead of that curve. As for other updates, Elon did say that for Neuralink, they do expect to have some more videos coming in the next month or two, so expect an update there. He said that they already have a monkey with a Neuralink implant who's able to play video games using just his mind with that Neuralink implant. And going back to when Neuralink gave their last update, they had pigs. I think Gertrude was one of them that was being a little bit obstinate. Musk said that the monkey's happy and healthy and that you can't even see the implant. Continuing with other projects, Elon did give us the background on why Tesla is involved in the CureVac mRNA manufacturing process. Turns out that was actually a project that Grohmann Engineering was working on when Tesla acquired them, and the employees felt really strongly about continuing that work. Elon gave permission, and that is what this has now evolved into. He said it was that, and then one other project for Intel to help with chip analysis. So I'm actually pretty glad that Elon was able to keep that on board. I think it's an interesting tangent, sort of tangent to what Tesla's doing, but again, still involves manufacturing. And we've talked before about how diversity of thought is important, and I think things like this can increase that. The strangest part of this interview, perhaps the most interesting part of the interview, was at the end when Elon Musk actually asked for Robinhood's CEO to join this Clubhouse interview. And then all of a sudden, it was basically Elon interviewing him about Robinhood's point of view on what had unfolded the last week or so with everything with the GameStop situation and the halting of buy trades on some of those stocks. This is something I'm sure we could spend an hour or more going through. It's kind of outside the scope of today's podcast, but essentially Robinhood's point of view is that their clearinghouse required them to have $3 billion in deposits to handle settled trades. That's about 10x what they would normally be required to have, or around $300 million. Robinhood is saying that as part of the negotiations to reduce that required capital, which they did not have because of the unexpected nature of these events, part of the way that they were able to reduce those requirements was to limit the buying on those securities, which was causing those limits to be so high. So Elon was really prodding and asking, okay, well, who's controlling those limits? Why did they spike suddenly? Elon really just asking if there was anything shady going involved there. And Robinhood kind of just punted on that. They said no, but there was really no firm answer there. So kind of an unresolved situation. But Robinhood, obviously their point of view is that this was the fault of that situation rather than choices that Robinhood made. But if Robinhood had had more capital available, well, they wouldn't have had to have put those limits in place. So I don't know, to some extent, it's being a little bit over-leveraged. Robinhood CEO pointed out that, of course, it wasn't just Robinhood that was in this situation. Other brokerages also dealt with the same. And because it was that deposit limit to cover unsettled trades, that's why they limited buying but not selling, because selling would raise cash, of course, a transaction that would reduce that deposit limit. So they said, you know, if you have the choice of just limiting the buying or limiting both the buying and selling, obviously people are going to hate it if they can't sell out of a position. So they definitely didn't want to do that. And that, of course, wouldn't help the predicament that Robinhood was in. So that's a good answer for why only buying was restricted. But the questions still remain about getting into the situation in the first place, if that action is a fair solution, and who at the end of the day is responsible for setting those limits. So it's certainly a complex situation. It's one I'm going to continue to read about. Let me know in the comments if you want to keep hearing more about this or if it's just kind of something that we're over and done with by now, and that'll help me for future episodes. All right, next up here, we've got a couple of Tesla heavyweights weighing in over the weekend, first with Ron Barron on a podcast that was published on Friday. He continued to reiterate his bullish stance on Tesla, saying he thinks it goes to $2,000 per share sometime in the next 8 to 10 years, so around a $2 trillion valuation. And he said that is not accounting for anything on the energy storage business. So similar stuff we've heard from Barron in the past. He did in this interview note Tesla's capital efficiency. So we talked a bit about that earlier, saying that Tesla spent $1 billion for their factory in China that's producing 250,000 cars a year. And then doing the math from what he said here, if they're doing 250,000 cars a year at a $40,000 average selling price and a 25% margin, then they're generating $2.5 billion per year off that $1 billion investment. This is something we talked a ton about leading up to Gigafactory Shanghai back in 2019, for those of you that have been listening for a while. Tesla was constantly mentioning their improvements in capital efficiency in Shanghai, and the market just seemed to continually ignore that, but now we have seen that come to fruition, and Barron here has done a great job of explaining that in one simple, easy-to-understand statement. Kathy Wood over at ARK Invest also made a podcast appearance over the weekend. A number of people have been looking forward to an update to their Tesla model, which they've been talking about for a few months now. And Kathy said that they expect that to happen in around a month or so. So we're getting closer to that. And of course, ARK just published, I think last week or the week prior, their big ideas for 2021. Next up here, as I'm recording, I've just seen an update from Morgan Stanley on their price target on Tesla. So this is from Adam Jonas. He's increased his price target on Tesla from $810 per share, now up to $880 per share, and also reiterated an overweight rating. Not a whole lot new in this note, so we won't spend a ton of time on it. For example, they have only increased their 2030 volume forecast from about 5.2 million vehicles now to about 5.4 million vehicles, and interestingly, lowered their 2021 forecast from 792,000 down to 785,000. I, of course, think they are conservative on both their forecasts there, so what was most interesting to me was a line in their overview section saying, quote, "Holding all else equal, if we were to run a scenario of a 50% compound annual growth rate through 2030, our hybrid discounted cash flow valuation model would rise in excess of $3,000 per share for Tesla," end quote. They do note immediately following that, quote, "To be clear, we are not prepared to treat such a scenario even within the scope of our bull case at this time, and believe there is much more for investors to explore in many of the non-unit-based auto business lines, such as insurance, energy, third-party battery supply, autonomy, and network services revenue," end quote. As for that bull case price target, Morgan Stanley has bumped that up slightly from $1,232 before, now to $1,272, so a $40 increase. All right, last couple of things for today. First up on the Model S and X refresh, Tesla has updated delivery timeline estimates for Europe, and it looks like all of those are now positioned for September. I've heard from a couple people over in Europe that did have orders even before the refresh went public, and it sounds like that is the date for them as well. So unfortunately, a long wait over there in Europe for the S and X refresh. I'm sure Tesla feels like there is really strong demand that they can first fulfill in the US, especially as production gets re-ramped up. So for what it's worth, the current estimated delivery for the Model S in the US is March, and then for the X, April. So for September to be first deliveries, I'm sure is very disappointing. However, I would expect it to be a relatively large batch of deliveries. September is the last month of Q3. So if Tesla follows a batching strategy, we could see maybe the first 6 or 8 or 10 weeks of production there in Q3 designated for Europe. If that's the case, then I would expect in the US, once the delivery estimates hit June, probably sometime shortly after that, they'll flip over to September. Finally today, just a quick personal update on my trip over the weekend. Thank you to those of you that wished me well on that trip. I did make it, so I had a 183-mile journey. We started out with about 340 miles of range. I did schedule a departure, so my battery should have been heated, ready to go. I charged up to about 95% just in case, so I had about 340 miles of rated range. When we got there, I had about 70 left. So it used about 270 miles of rated range to go, let's say 185 miles, and that was at 30 degree temperatures. I didn't restrict my speed at all, so I would say my median speed was probably 75 miles per hour. Didn't restrict cabin heating, which was around 70 degrees, and also had probably a couple hundred extra pounds of weight. So all considered, I didn't think it was too bad. I didn't get as diligent of stats as I would have liked due to a couple other factors, but did just want to give that quick update so people understand the ballpark for using a 2021 Model 3 in the winter. Certainly, we'll have more updates like that in the future. That'll do it for today then. As always, thank you for listening. Make sure you're subscribed and signed up for notifications. You can also find me on Twitter at Tesla Podcast. And I'll see you tomorrow for the Tuesday, February 2nd episode of Tesla Daily. Thank you.